It is said that when you hear the sound of hooves outside your window, you look out expecting horses, not zebras. And whilst it is true the common things are common, one day it might just be that there's been a breakout at the local zoo and it really is a herd of zebra running past your clinic. Or you might have moved to Africa. But in urgent care, we always have to be thinking of those things that are less common, and at the very least giving them some thought. Thinking about differentials is the best way not to make a misdiagnosis. Asking yourself, could it be this, or could it be that, and formulating differentials in your plan should help prevent you from attributing symptoms and signs to the wrong diagnosis. Some days in urgent care you seem to bounce from one case to the next, easily diagnosing and managing patients, and yet some days you hit upon a case that does not quite add up, or is just not quite fitting into one box or another. On these occasions, thinking outside the box can help you find the answer, and will often require some further investigations or a chat to a hospital specialist. Or you might need to ask a more experienced urgent care colleague. But you should never feel like you have nowhere to go. When we have a one-off, walk-in consultation with a patient we do not know, the fear of missing something and letting them back into the world can be daunting for the urgent care physician. And at Christmas and New Year, when things are busy and the pressure is on to see more patients and deal with the expanding queue, the complicated patient that does not fit into an obvious box can be especially challenging. When a patient has classic appendicitis or has had an obvious stroke, these referrals are easy and unchallenged. But when you have someone who is not obviously requiring acute referral, but for whom a diagnosis is not clear, you can feel a little adrift at sea. On these occasions, talking with your colleagues is a great way to share the problem, make a plan, and to give you another perspective, particularly if your colleague happens to have a particular set of skills acquired over a career working in the highest parts of the world. So when I heard hooves outside my window one Christmas evening, I looked out expecting horses, but what I saw were reindeer. This is When Santa Came to Urgent Care, Part 5. Good evening, Santa. It's good to see you again. What's your problem this year?
Well, what it is, Doctor, I've been flying my sleigh higher than usual because of storms over the Pacific. I found myself feeling awfully tired and drowsy and short of breath. I do feel better now, but I thought I might be coming down with something, so that's why I've come to see you.
Okay, Santa. So everything seems to check out with you today. My suspicion, though, is that your symptoms are related to the altitude. Now, urgent care doctors know a lot about some things and less about others. There are some conditions we might run into, we cannot be specialised in all of them. So one of the skills an urgent care physician needs is to be able to identify when they need help and to ask the appropriate specialist. So in this case, I happen to know a doctor who can help tell us a little bit more about your condition.
Hello, Dinesh speaking.
Hey, Dinesh, it's Guy Melrose here. Are you free to talk? I've got a couple of clinical questions for you.
Oh, hey, Guy, how's it going? Sure, shoot.
Yeah, it's good. So I've just consulted with Santa Claus, and they have come into the urgent care today having crossed the Pacific in their sleigh, complaining of symptoms of feeling unwell with a headache, a bit of nausea, a bit of shortness of breath during the trip. They're feeling a bit better now, and I've examined them and can't find anything wrong with them. Their vitals are normal, clinical exam is normal. Interestingly, they said that they flew a lot higher due to weather conditions during this flight. So that made me wonder, could these symptoms be related to altitude? And I know that you've spent a good part of this year about as high as you can in a clinical context. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on that, and if you could maybe tell me a bit more about altitude and the effects on the body.
Well, yeah, that does sound a bit concerning, and you know, with a patient, you know, as important, I suppose, as Santa Claus, you know, you do have to, you know, consider his welfare. He's got a big job at this time of year, and there's you know, multiple hazards, I think, associated with his line of work, really. And can you tell me a little bit more? Do you have any idea, you know, how high he might have gone and how long his exposure might have been?
So it was across the Pacific, and so I'm not sure how long that takes. It's a good, I know it's about 12 hours in an aeroplane to fly that distance. And he said it was above the weather due to storms, so I'm thinking it must be at least over 16,000 feet.
Right, yeah. Well, at that altitude, I mean, you know, definitely you're going to have some concerns with altitude sickness. I'm not entirely 100% on the mass, but at 16,000 feet, we're going to be well over 2,500 meters. And that's the altitude, really, that we start to get concerned about with altitude sickness. So basically, as we progress up in altitude, our body doesn't adapt very quickly to that change, and we do have to go gradually. So any kind of sudden change in altitude can leave us exposed to altitude sickness, which is a constellation of symptoms which sound very similar to what Santa Claus is experiencing. Did you want to just go over those symptoms again, and I can just consider each of those in a little more detail?
Yes, they've described a headache, a kind of a vague headache to start with, and then just felt a little bit nauseous, a little bit dizzy. They described that he also felt a little bit short of breath, and these symptoms seemed to be relieved when they landed here in New Zealand, and they came straight to urgent care because we were open and a non-appointment service, and I just wanted to get a checkup.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And you're happy to have excluded other potential causes, you know, like him having had a small stroke or any other kind of cerebral event or anything like that. You weren't considering anything else on the differential other than altitude at present?
Well, yes, I think clinically examination was normal, vitals were normal, and I think, yeah, we're considering those other causes. Altitude was something I was considering, but not knowing as much about it.
Yeah.
I thought,
I think you're very much on the right track with this as well. The symptoms that you're describing actually sound quite classically like acute, what we call mountain sickness, which is basically an acute altitude illness. It tends to go by the moniker of mountain sickness because it's usually people in a more terrestrial environment that are going up mountains. And then experience these symptoms. But, you know, obviously Santa Claus has different considerations. He's using his sleigh, of course, to reach those altitudes faster than you normally would. So basically the cardinal feature of mountain sickness really is headache. It's often the symptom that we use to kind of initiate the diagnostic process. But that's actually in combination with a lot of other symptoms that you've mentioned, in particular this idea of fatigue and weakness, dizziness or lightheadedness, gastrointestinal symptoms like nausea and vomiting, and historically also difficulty sleeping used to be included in our diagnostic criteria, but we've tended to lay that by the wayside in favor of more functional score in terms of how much exercise tolerance. And in, say, Santa's case, it would be, you know, how vigorously were you able to drive the sleigh, you know, as compared to your normal kind of lower altitude flights. So really that's what we're considering. So these symptoms really form a constellation of symptoms that we use to create the diagnosis. And like I said, headache is really the starting point. It's the cardinal feature of that. So it sounds like you're very much on the right track diagnostically. The one thing critically that I'm going to ask you, a couple of questions. First of all, were there any neurological symptoms? Was he ataxic or, did he have altered mental status or anything like that?
So from the history, he reports dizziness, but nothing else. And there was no one else on board the sleigh to witness anything else.
Okay. So there was no history of him stumbling around or really having, coordination difficulties during that flight.
Not that he's reported, but I guess that would be something you would see commonly on a mountain when somebody's trying to climb Everest, for example. Is that something you witness
Yeah, yeah. So basically what I'm just trying to tease out there is these altitude conditions, altitude illness exists on a spectrum. So the starting point is usually, you know, possibly just something simple like a high altitude headache and then progressing into acute mountain sickness. But this, if it progresses unchecked, and what I'm trying to screen here for is high altitude cerebral edema. So basically, as you kind of progress along this spectrum, you can have much more serious physiological implications. And what I'd be particularly worried about is that he would develop a bit of brain swelling. And that, as I mentioned, is referred to as high altitude cerebral edema, or HACE as the acronym. And really, the characteristic of that diagnosis is they would have altered mental status or ataxia. And often what we do to test that is basically get them to walk on a straight line and see if they exhibit the classic sort of truncal ataxia that we see, for example, when police might have someone step out of a vehicle who's intoxicated and walk that line. They would be kind of staggering all over and not be able to do a very smooth heel-toe progression. And that truncal ataxia, we actually also see that in high-altitude cerebral edema. Another great one I often use to test people for that is basically a simple finger to nose pointing test that may elicit it as well too. And if you have time in your consultation as well to get them to draw a clock face as well too. Sometimes they show a lot of difficulty drawing that clock face, and there's a good sensitivity in the diagnosis of HACE as opposed to just mountain sickness, high altitude mountain sickness, when you use that test as well.
So in how would you prevent this from happening?
Well, there's actually some very good data on prevention, and I'd probably draw people's attention to a reference here, which has just been recently published, actually. It's the Wilderness Medical Society Practice Guidelines for the Prevention and Treatment of Altitude Illness, and it's a 2019 update, so it's hot off the presses. And really, the list of authors are really the people who have done all the fundamental research in altitude sickness and treatment in it. And they're also a group of quite avid mountaineers as well, too, having had a long history in mountains and working at altitude. So it's probably the most comprehensive guidelines that you'll come across. And that was published in the Wilderness and Environmental Medicine 2019 as a practice guideline. So just referring to that, really, and I can't stress this enough, is really probably the first recommendation would be just gradual ascent. Now, it does sound like Santa had some problems there and wasn't able to make a gradual ascent as he normally would have. And sometimes in those circumstances, if you know you're going to have a rapid ascent, usually a bit of prevention is the key. And pharmacologically, we use a medication, acetazolamide, to often try to prevent symptoms from occurring. And basically, as many know, this is a diuretic medication. It's a carbonic anhydrase inhibitor. And what we're basically doing is really pushing the body into diuresis. That's really how it works. Diuresis normally occurs when you progress to altitude, but by pushing the body into a kind of heightened state of diuresis, you allow increased rate of respiration, which combats the metabolic acid. Well, basically, you create a metabolic acidosis, which pushes your body to breathe more. And by breathing more, you're able to oxygenate it more and counteract some of these altitude symptoms. And basically, the dose of medication that you use of this acetazolamide is 125 milligrams dosing every 12 hours, taken, if you can, 24 hours before your ascent.
So as this was an unpredictable thing, would having oxygen on board the sleigh have helped in an unpressurized sleigh like this?
Definitely, yeah. And I think that would be good advice for Santa in the future to always have, you know, pressurized oxygen with him as well, too. So just to kind of maybe start from first principles, oxygen doesn't change in concentration as you ascend in altitude, whether you're at sea level or even up to altitudes at the limit of the, you know, the troposphere, at the limit of the troposphere at the poles. I mean, that's 7 kilometers, which is, you know, coming close to the height of Everest as well, too. So that kind of, obviously, at that kind of altitude, the air is spreading out as it approaches the stratosphere. So the implication of that is, though it is still 21% in terms of concentration, it has spread out enough that the partial pressure of oxygen has decreased by about threefold. So to have a pressurized supply of oxygen allows you to basically kind of get around the fact that you would be breathing oxygen that would be very low in partial pressures, and as a result, very poor in gas exchange. So the pressurized oxygen would definitely help.
And you obviously see this in a mountain context often in your line of work, but Santa here was in an unpressurized aircraft. In New Zealand, are there any mountains that are high enough to cause mountain sickness, or would we most likely see this in somebody in an unpressurized aircraft who strays a bit too high?
Yes, and we can see that in a number of different contexts, but yes, for those of us that don't have the opportunity to ride in you know, unpressurized sleighs or in unpressurized aircraft, you know, we definitely have to consider this in terrestrial environment, even in New Zealand. It was thought probably in the mountain community here for a while that, you know, you just wouldn't see altitude sickness, but it became apparent with a number of cases that altitude sickness was occurring. In particular, some of the climbs in New Zealand that are kind of going above 2,500 meters, for example, you know, Mount Aspiring and in Mount Cook, you do get a number of presentations of altitude sickness. It might be a good time to ask you as well, did Santa have any respiratory problems? Did he have a cough, or was he dyspneic? Or I think it'd be reasonable to kind of screen him for any respiratory problems as well.
Yeah, did mention a little bit of shortness of breath. So is that, we can put that down to an altitude problem as well, if we've screened for other causes?
Yeah, and I think that's something you definitely want to consider as well, too. So there's another condition along that spectrum of altitude illness that I've described. And basically, it's something that we call high altitude pulmonary edema. And as you go up in altitude, there's basically sequential vasoconstriction that's occurring constantly in the lungs as you're put under a greater hypoxic and hypobaric stress with elevation. And the net result is there's actual endothelial damage which causes leaks into your lungs. And this can cause a form of pulmonary edema, quite different from cardiogenic pulmonary edema, but still quite a debilitating condition when it arises. The first sign is actually dyspnea at rest. And we usually pair it with at least one other symptom that the patient would complain about, whether that's cough or weakness or decreased exercise performance or a sensation of tightness or congestion in the chest. So we look for at least one other symptom. In addition, we look for at least two clinical signs, and that could be any of the following: crackles or wheezing in a lung field or cyanosis or tachypnea or tachycardia. So we do look for both signs and symptoms in order to clinch that diagnosis. Now, the luxury is in urgent care, you can get a chest x-ray, and that would actually show this kind of patchy changes in the lungs, you know, quite characteristic of pulmonary edema, these fluffy areas. Another way to quite simply do it, if your urgent care does have an ultrasound as well too, it's very easy and quick to put an ultrasound onto the chest in a standard positions of the ultrasound for chest ultrasound. And basically what you'll see shooting through the lung field is what we refer to as comet tails. And these comet tails are almost pathognomonic of fluid in the lungs in this condition. So you can clinch the diagnosis there with these kind of bright hyperechoic lines going through your ultrasound field and allow you to make the diagnosis in that way. But again, quite a serious condition, you know, something we wouldn't want Santa to have. It could really impair his performance. And I'll just maybe briefly mention what we can do for Santa if he does have those symptoms and you do make that diagnosis. One of the mainstays in treatment now is nifedipine. And interestingly enough, the prevention dose and the treatment dose are identical. So nifedipine, as you know, is a vasodilator. It's used in a number of conditions, in particular hypertension and other conditions. And it can be given at 30 milligrams extended release over 12 hours or 20 milligrams extended release over 8 hours. And that's the same dose you would use for both prevention and for treatment in this case.
So in your line of work up mountains and at high altitude, you're seeing people who hopefully have prepared for this and maybe taken acetazolamide if they're doing a rapid ascent, and you're keeping an eye out for these things. You're obviously limited diagnostically, but you've mentioned ultrasound as a key tool that's probably available to you, the sort of POCUS machines now. But are there places in the world that you could be practicing medicine in a city or town type environment that are high enough up that people would get altitude symptoms if they arrived from a different altitude, a lower sea level altitude, for example? Are there places in the world that you could be functioning in a normal life rather than a wilderness life?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of places in the world where people, lowlanders like us in New Zealand will travel to and arrive to acutely and develop symptoms. You know, places I think classically in South America, La Paz, I think is quite a classic example. People often arrive in Mexico City and can become symptomatic. Travelers to Colorado, in particular, if they land in Denver, then shoot off to the mountains, can often report being quite symptomatic, you know, on their first kind of night or two. Thankfully, these cases usually amount to acute mountain sickness as opposed to the more serious conditions of high altitude cerebral edema or pulmonary edema. But as I mentioned, these exist on a spectrum. So really your understanding of these conditions and really your adherence to a slow rate of ascent, if you can avoid traveling and flying directly to these places and going straight to the ski field, if you can actually kind of delay that progression, you're in better stead. And if you can't, definitely consider preventative medications. That would be a good discussion to have with your doctor. Often we might see people that come into urgent care that might need a little bit of advice around this and possibly a prescription, actually, if their travel plans look like they will be putting them at risk.
So prevention is definitely the sensible approach if you know you're going somewhere like this. It would seem that Santa made some course corrections that maybe put them into a situation of developing these symptoms a little more unexpectedly, but potentially a future thing that they might consider, as you say, is some oxygen on board for these conditions. You mentioned that at the poles, what is the conditions like at the North Pole? What would be Santa's acclimatized, like normal living conditions compared to the flight across the Pacific?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Santa will be definitely faced with a lot of cold temperatures. And interestingly enough, because of the gravitational effect, the actual troposphere is actually less at the poles. So air is more compressed actually at the poles. So he has an advantage in terms of flight in that regard. Unfortunately, there's very little in terms of altitude terrain that Santa can do some pre-acclimatizing training on in order to, you know, develop his hypoxic exposure and develop his basically acclimatized to altitude. Interestingly enough, in the South Pole, you do have mountains such as Mount Vinson, which might provide a suitable, training ground in order to expose yourself to some altitude. But in the pole, your opportunity is quite limited. Now, I heard from a reliable resource that Santa has been using a hypoxic tent to expose himself both to a hypoxic and hypobaric environment. Now, that's great, and I think that's probably one of the best things he can do to train for these runs, given the physical conditions of the North Pole being essentially at sea level. So basically, in these situations, he would be basically putting himself into these tents for prolonged periods of time in order to put a hypoxic and hypobaric stress on himself and thereby get himself physiologically prepared for ascents to altitude. And generally, when people do this, they have reported, and there's evidence to suggest, that they are less susceptible to altitude illness, and the severity of their symptoms happens to be less as well, too. So that's probably the best thing he can do without relying too heavily on pharmacology in order to prepare himself for these Christmas runs.
But ultimately, rapid descent is the key, and that's why the symptoms improved when they landed in New Zealand. The descent from altitude reduced the symptoms, and that would also be why, if a pressurized aeroplane loses pressure, the pilot descends rapidly to a certain altitude as quickly as possible. That's the same theory, isn't it?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So you said it very well yourself there, that rapid descent is really the cure to altitude sickness. If altitude is what's created the problem, then a descent to a physiologically less stressful environment is the cure. And thankfully, Santa did that in this case, and it doesn't sound like his conditions progressed beyond acute mountain sickness into the other more serious conditions of high altitude cerebral edema and high altitude pulmonary edema. So I think, all the kids will be happy about that. I know myself personally, I'm a huge fan of Santa. So I'm personally very happy to hear that his symptoms were limited to that.
Yeah, it's like you say, I think we need to ensure in this particular case, in this particularly important patient, that we've excluded other causes of, like you say, some of the symptoms could have been put down to a central nervous system condition, or I guess some of the shortness of breath symptoms. We've got to be thinking of pulmonary embolisms if you've been on a long flight and some of these other things. But narrowing it down, if all of those were okay, then his symptoms sound very much like an altitude sickness. And maybe for Christmas, Santa needs to upgrade the open sleigh to a pressurized cabin to enable him to cruise at 40,000 feet along with the various aircraft out there.
That would be a great idea. You know, plus also, traveling solo does put him at risk. It would be great if Mrs. Claus as well too could go with him. In their rescue kit, like I mentioned, some of the medication that they want to include would obviously be the acetazolamide, the nifedipine. Ibuprofen probably would be helpful just in terms of symptoms, in particular high altitude headache, and maybe the more mild cases of AMS. And dexamethasone, which we didn't mention, is a potent steroid, and we do use that to treat high-altitude cerebral edema. It is a bit of a rescue medication, so if people are getting that medication, they probably should be going down. In the 2019 guidelines that I've referenced, they do mention it as a prevention medication for high-altitude cerebral edema, but it should probably be used very judiciously and only in people who really are kind of, you know, almost unavoidably forced to make rapid ascents. So, for example, rescue teams or for example, Santa in this case, who was forced to make a rapid ascent, might have actually, if he had that on board the sleigh, had an opportunity to maybe abate some of his symptoms as well too. But like I said before, and I'll just say it again, is that rapid descent is really the key. But maybe a second passenger along this year, Mrs. Claus, and a rescue kit with some of those medications might just add that added degree of safety for him.
So fascinating. Urgent care, one of the reasons I enjoy it, and I know having talked to you before about it, is the breadth of conditions that we can come across. We can become quite expert in some that we see a lot of, but there's something that can always walk in that totally takes us from left field there. And we've got to be prepared to apply the same sort of principles and approach it with the same kind of logic that we would do any case, but we might end up with something quite unusual. And in this case, Santa coming in with altitude symptoms is probably something we wouldn't see in a normal urgent care down here on at New Zealand's altitudes, where certainly the clinics I work in are. But just talking to you about it, it's fascinating medicine, and you know, never know, one day you might be in a find yourself in a more high altitude environment and run into these things. But I've, as always, Dinesh, find it fascinating talking to you about these things. So thank you for answering my questions. I hope those listening find it as interesting as I do. So I appreciate it.
Oh, Guy, as always, a pleasure. Always happy to have a discussion about these topics. And in particular, I'm glad we could put our heads together and hopefully give Santa the care and treatment he needs in order to finish the big job this year.
Yes, well, I'll relay your information to them, and they can hopefully make some adjustments to their travel plans in the future. Thank you, Dinesh, and I'll speak to you again.
Thank you. Happy to help.
So, Santa, I've had a very useful chat with my colleague, Dr. Dinesh, and it could be that your symptoms are attributable to the altitude when you took your sleigh up over that weather. But given your age, we should run some tests tonight to make sure we're not missing anything else. So we will be doing some blood tests, an ECG and a chest x-ray, and if all is good, you'll probably need to consider some adjustments to your sleigh.
Well, I'm so glad I came and saw you, Doctor. Thank goodness for urgent care. Now have yourself a lovely Christmas, Nadolig Llawen pawb.
So in the end, Santa's workup was all fine, and we were able to attribute their symptoms to the altitude change in an unpressurised sleigh. They completed their journey, and they took on board Dr. Dinesh's suggestions. In addition to the hypoxic tent, they now carry supplemental oxygen on board, along with a portable pulse oximeter, and Santa now has a co-pilot with them. They also have a transponder fitted, so next time, if you go to Flight Tracker, such as Flight Radar 24, you will see that Santa is tracked on their journey around the world. It's much safer all round. So in your standard urban urgent care in New Zealand, we're not likely to see a case of altitude sickness. But we must be prepared for the weird and wonderful coming through our doors. We cannot be expert in everything. But one thing an urgent care physician should be expert in is knowing when things do not add up, when things are not quite in keeping with all the usual things we see. So when those spidey senses tingle, listen to them, ask for help, and always think, could this be a zebra? Now that's all we have from Santa for this year. Next week we'll be back to our usual schedule. We have lots planned for this year, including some brand new podcast ideas, which I hope you will all enjoy. I wish you all a happy, prosperous, safe, and healthy 2020. But for now, thanks for listening.